You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. Once again, today I am happy to have a co-host, Ray Dietrich, who is has spent more than 15 years as a California law enforcement officer. And this, my friends, is now the Randy and Ray show for today. And we're going to talk about all things law enforcement, but especially about the Law Enforcement Officer Memorial in Washington, D.C., in commemoration of Police Week. Ray, good to have you back on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Randy. It's always a good time.
It is always a good time. So, you know, this is Police Week. And for the listeners, those of you that are in law enforcement, you probably know that this is National Police Week. For many of the listeners who's never heard a reference to it, John F. Kennedy actually is the one who signed the legislation creating National Police Week. And what's so important about this week is in Washington, D.C., there is a beautiful memorial, and it is granite that holds the name of every law enforcement officer in America who's been killed in the line of duty. And that's pretty sacred ground, don't you agree, Ray?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I want to say it's over 20,000 officers that are listed on that now. It's incredibly high, more than you would think.
Yeah, this thing takes up an entire block almost. And each year during Police Week is when the previous year's names are uncovered. So unfortunately, this year there's actually more than 163 names that were carved into this granite just because of last year's deaths.
That is unacceptable, as we all know. It's crazy that it's that kind of numbers, and it's just trending, and you know, it's at least we have the positive side of Police Week where we can get together and talk about it and see what's happening in this country. But yeah, it's crazy that it's that many from just last year.
You know, I was looking at over some of the statistics, and you know, we've talked about the dangers of law enforcement many times. But the violence towards these officers, you know, it's heartbreaking. You know, this week alone, several more were shot and killed. The most disturbing, I think, just happened a couple days ago in Biloxi, where a 24-year officer, Robert McKeithen, was literally assassinated in the parking lot of the Biloxi Police Department.
And that's what it's coming to. It's coming back to the old stories of the 70s. My dad used to tell me when they had to keep a shooter on the top of sheriff stations in L.A. because they were taking Molotov cocktails over the back fence. Like, now they have to worry about, you know, getting followed home or getting attacked in the parking lot. It's an all-out attack on law enforcement at this point.
Yeah, this officer, Robert McKeithen, from what I understand, this guy was a beloved police officer in Biloxi. The guy won the Medal of Valor for saving children during Hurricane Katrina. And I think, you know, one of the things that really hits home to me, Ray, is the fact that he was getting ready to retire. He had almost ready to punch out and enjoy his life.
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, there seems to be two profiles that fit, you know, officers killed, and, you know, and obviously there's more, but it always seems as if it's a younger officer with babies or a pregnant spouse at home, or somebody weeks or years away from retirement. I don't know what it is about that, but it's always just very sad when it comes out that, even more sad than it would be.
You know? Yeah, it is. And this shooter, this kid's 19 years old. He was seen walking around the police department's parking lot. He just walked up to Officer McKeithen for absolutely no reason whatsoever and just shot him numerous times, killing him. I mean, it literally seemed to be a targeted assassination.
100% assassination. There is no, from what I've seen, obviously, but there's no conflict, no fight, no him trying to detain this guy, nothing. Just an assassination, just like you said, like a literal all-out attack on law enforcement. I believe he was on duty, but had already changed out of his into his plain clothes. He's walking through, you know, out into the parking lot is what I believe happened there. It's awful.
It is awful. And, you know, just statistically, you know, numbers can be a little, you know, misleading sometimes. But, you know, in the last 5 years, 875 law enforcement officers were killed in the line of duty. That number to me is staggering. 875.
Well, and then how many were shot and survived? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're at over 800 that did not, how many actually were shot? How many had major assault injuries? Like, the violence against law enforcement just ratchets up every single year in compounds. I don't know what the solution is there to stop it.
Well, you hit it right on the head. I mean, each year, more than 50,000 American law enforcement officers are assaulted. And out of that number includes shootings, stabbings, beatings, you know, weapons, not weapons. But think of that number, Ray. That 50,000, more than 50,000 police officers are assaulted. There's not even a million cops in the entire country. There's about 800,000, 850, and 50,000 of them will get assaulted. And that violence, as you said, is it's not getting better. It's getting worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people wonder why officers can seem on edge. Maybe it's because they're waiting for an assault to occur. Yeah, at this time, you know, 50,000 assaults. That's what drives people to be so on edge and have to be in this constant state of readiness. And that's some of the things that the public doesn't understand about us. I think, like, if we're really talking about why, you know, cops seem rough or scary, or, you know, they're all business when it's a contact, it's because they know that there's been so many assaults on officers. They know that it could happen at any minute and it can happen from anyone. So with all of that hanging out there and everyone's so hyper aware of all of the assaults, how else are they supposed to act? So yeah. Just something to think about for the average listener out there who hasn't put on a gun belt.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And, you know, I want to go back to Police Week. You know, as a, one of my greatest duties and honors, when I was a law enforcement officer for more than 30 years, was for 15 years, I was the assistant commander of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department Honor Guard. And part of those duties were to honor, you know, the lives lost, both locally here in Las Vegas, but also in the state capitol, when law enforcement officers died in the state, but also in Washington, D.C. So I've been at this memorial many, many times, and I got to tell you, it every single time I'm there, especially during Police Week, it is a very emotional experience to participate and be. I think the last time I was there, Ray, I think about 35 to 40,000 police officers from all over the world descended on Washington for Police Week.
And I have a terrible confession to make. I have not made Washington yet. I'm committing to next year. However, in California, and I know a lot of places, everyone kind of leads up their local and state memorials up into the national. You know, usually you'll see a lot of departments doing memorials now, and then at the state level, like, for instance, California just had their big state memorial service the last week. It's like a whole month that leads into this. It's a very, very big deal for the police community. I'm super excited to finally go next year because I did not make it this year, but it's something that it's almost like you feel like you have to do it at least once as a cop. So yeah. I'm excited to get out there. I wish I was going this time 100%, but it's something important, and I definitely want to make that next year.
Yeah, I really encourage all law enforcement officers definitely to attend Police Week at least once. You get a sense of unity, a sense of pride. It's also melancholy, because there is so much emotion on display. I mean, you see, what will happen is there will be a candlelight vigil, which I mean to tell you, this will rip your heart out, man. And it is a beautiful, beautiful sight. There will be thousands and thousands of law enforcement officers all dressed in their, not only their, you know, some will be in their regular uniform, but there will be many in their dress uniforms for this occasion. And thousands will light candles and hold them up as music is played. I mean, and it's chilling. It's bone tingling. It's pride. It's emotion. I mean, you can hear the sobs of people. You can just see tears running down the cheeks of so many, because almost everybody there has lost someone in the line of duty, and a friend, a comrade, a relative. But it's a beautiful thing to see, and it's a terrible thing to see at the same time.
Right. I can relate that to a county, you know, like our local county would do a police memorial in May every year. And the thing that struck me, we'd have a candlelight vigil, and this is all small scale compared to what you're going to go see in the big Police Week. But what always got me is all those things you're talking about. But when the survivors, the families start coming out, and it's the wife and kids of this, or of the officers killed, and they're coming out, and to see the support that they get from our community, that will drop some tears. It's a special thing. So.
You hit it right on the head. And you know, these, so the candlelight vigil is one of the crowning moments of this week. Then the president will speak and commemorate Law Enforcement Memorial Day. And at that, there will be the survivors will be addressed by the president. President Trump has been a tremendous law enforcement supporter. One thing that a lot of people don't know is that George Bush really, really cared about law enforcement officers. In fact, every year that he was in office, he would actually meet with the families of every single police officer who died in the line of duty. And, you know, we're talking, you know, sometimes a couple hundred people. And he took private time. He never advertised it. He never told anybody. But every single one of those families was given an audience of the President of the United States. And I thought that was so classy, and really honored law enforcement. You know,
absolutely, it's a completely honorable thing to do for those left behind, especially if there's children involved, which many times there are. Those kids are going to remember that moment that the President of the United States cared enough to take even a few minutes with them about their mom, their dad, whoever it was. That's something they can look back in for a very long time, their entire life. And it's important. And I love hearing those stories. I mean, these guys get pushed to the side and they're a story on the news for 5 minutes sometimes, unless the community and even politicians do something about it to make it important and make those families feel special.
So the president will be talking. He will be addressing the families. And then, like I said, there's going to be thousands and thousands of cops there. So for my listeners, if you are planning on being at Police Week, Well, let me put it this way. If you're not planning on being at Police Week, plan it. If you can get there this year, it's May 13th, 14th, and 15th, is the days when most of the activities will be taking place. The memorial itself will be manned by honor guards from all over the country. There will be events planned, and if you look under this website, NLEOMF.org, that's the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund.org. They are the ones who run Police Week, along with Concerns of Police Survivors, two phenomenal organizations. So if you look up NLEOMF.org, you'll see the whole schedule for Police Week. If you're in the area, if you live in Washington area, I really encourage you to come out, and I will be there along with my organization, the Wounded Blue. We will actually have a booth set up in what's called Tent City. Now, Tent City is run by the Fraternal Order of Police. It is down by the baseball stadium, actually, and there are hundreds of law enforcement vendors and booths for police organizations, for support groups. We will have a booth there, the Wounded Blue, which is the National Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Law Enforcement Officers, because this, my friends, is our official launch of this organization. So you got to go onto the website. That's thewoundedblue.org. Check us out. Make a donation if you can, and beginning next week, you will be able to become a member of the Wounded Blue. For law enforcement and former law enforcement, there is a huge array of incredible benefits for joining. For those people who support law enforcement and want to be part of something that actually aids injured and disabled law enforcement officers, a very small donation, and you get a Wounded Blue sticker for your car. You get a driver's license holder that identifies you as a supporter. You get an incredible discount package at over 300,000 businesses across the country, and you get to be part of something that is going to really touch the lives of thousands and thousands of law enforcement officers, both injured and not. So I really urge you to come out, come visit me down at Tent City, and if you're law enforcement or not, because I'd love to see you. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, you know, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for, this stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras. Gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com and register with them, contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Part of this, Ray, is there is a tremendous amount of fellowship that takes place, you know, and sometimes, you know, cops feel like they're alone, and when you're part of something like this, you realize that there is a big brotherhood out there.
Well, fellowship is everything, right? Like that, and connecting with people, especially like when you're talking about the Wounded Blue, which is going to be the premier foundation helping law enforcement officers. Let's face it, like I'm very excited about your membership program, everything that comes with it. But the fellowship of all these people getting together with common thoughts, common issues, common stresses, like there's something to be said with that, and have these organizations come in there and be able to serve the whole group and everyone kind of connect in. It's going to help a lot of people, a lot of cops, a lot of supporters. You know, it's the knowing that there's others out there other than just your small circle. Some of these guys are in departments with 30 people. You know, they have one partner, two partners, right? Seeing the masses of the community, and community is everything, right? That's where it all comes from. But you did leave one thing out when you're talking about the Wounded Blue. I'm just saying, if your listeners haven't downloaded or purchased or rented the Wounded Blue documentary on Amazon yet, please go do that. It is amazing. So I forgot. I had to cover it for you, buddy.
I'm glad you brought that up, man. I'm glad you brought that up. Now, let me ask you a personal question. You know, you spent more than 15 years as a police officer. And what's one of the things that you miss the most about the job?
Oh, it's my partners. It's my partners, my friends. Like, outside of the job itself, it's the brotherhood. I mean, for lack of a better term, like the ride or die friends and partners that you have that will do anything for you at any moment at a drop of a hat, that tight internal community is probably the number one thing I miss.
I could not agree more. In fact, every police officer that I have talked to that, you know, I spent more than three decades on two different police departments retiring from the Las Vegas Metro PD. And I'm often asked, you know, do you miss the job? And I can't really say that I miss the job per se, but I sure as hell miss the people that I worked with. And that's truly what I miss the most is, was being able to have that camaraderie and also, you know, play a role in their lives, because that was part of the attraction. Are those relationships that developed, you know, in the foxhole, so to speak?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, it's the progression in that job. Like, you start mentoring, you become a training officer, which, let's face it, that's the most important job in law enforcement as an FTO, right? You're a training officer. But the relationships that you build in that job, like my relationship with my FTO now that I rode around with for 6 months in his car on graveyards in South Central LA as a green rookie cop, I can still call him at any time and he will pick up the phone and be like, "What you need, bro?" Like, that's what we have that I don't think a lot of people get to experience. Maybe the military for sure, but outside of this type of job, it's a different connection that we have with each other for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And this is demonstrated really dramatically at Police Week. But, you know, one of the things that I take certain memories with me, and probably some of the most, I guess, emotional, were watching the family members take a piece of paper and a pen, or excuse me, a pencil, and place it against the names of their loved one and trace that name and watch the emotion that takes place when they do that. It's almost like for a moment, you know, their loved one is with them again.
Well, and they get to take that home and keep that with them as a memorial for them doing that. It's nice that it exists, you know, that we have something like this that people, and you know, the survivors, it's all for the survivors, right? Like showing them the respect that their loved one didn't die for nothing, you know, and having all these things and Police Week and the memorials, it's a great thing. So super excited. I can't believe I'm missing it, actually, now that we're getting me all excited about it. I really messed up by not going.
Well, and the other part of this is that it is one hell of a party. One thing that happens at Tent City, which is where all the vendors and at basically everybody that goes to Police Memorial Week will go to Tent City. It is wild. It is fun. You know, it's a time when cops let their hair down. They bring their families. It is a hell of a time. And you know, there's a couple bars there. Kelly's Bar is one of them in D.C. that literally has been the watering hole for Police Week for as long as I can remember. And there is some funny stuff that takes place over there. And there's some of the stories are absolutely legend, because one of the things that cops can do very well is party when it's party time.
Yeah, there's some classic stories from an entire California state gang convention that's one a year. And I can compare it to that, where, you know, you get 1,000 cops into the same hotel in the same environment for a few days. It can be turned into quite a bit of fun. We'll just leave it at that. A lot of fun.
I remember, yeah, I mean, sometimes it gets a little out of hand. I mean, there was a Narcotics Officers Association conference one year in when I was a New Jersey police officer, and it was in Atlantic City, and it got way out of hand. I mean, with in fact, they were no longer the association was not allowed. They were basically 86th from Atlantic City after one of the years. Yes, there is some.
That doesn't surprise me for some reason. No. I'm just saying.
No, it's pretty crazy stuff. You know, we talk about, you know, Police Week is really important because of what it memorializes, which is the sacrifice of all those, you know, who gave their lives in the line of duty. But there's another part of that, and that is it's really important. For the officers themselves to gather, to let off steam, but also to understand that there is this bond, and this is a bond that needs to be not only further developed within their own agencies, but also the understanding that if you're a cop in Connecticut, or you're a cop in California, you're part of a group of people that is very, very special.
Oh yeah, special and connected. Doesn't matter if you're a big city cop, you're a country deputy, you know, you have no experience, or you're a 30-year-old salty veteran. The bottom line is, you're on a traffic stop and somebody drives by, they're going to check on you, and that's just how we roll. And it's always been that way. It's something that in our community that the brotherhood is as deep as it was for me in the military. And I've never seen anything else like that. So the connections are everything. The fellowships are, all of those things are everything. I don't know if people understand like how closely we're connected just within this community. And, you know, it's not a job. Like, I guess that's the thing that people don't get. Like when the dangerous job list comes out and the crane operator is ranked above the police officer, and everyone's like, see, that's not the most dangerous job. Yeah, that's not a job. It's something that people are willingly going out to catch harm to help others, period. And that's not a crane operator. I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but there you go.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm actually glad you brought that up, because, You know, I've had this discussion with actually in the open media where anti-law enforcement people will say, you know, it's not that dangerous a job. Just as you said, you know, if you go with the statistically, there's more crane operators killed in the line. Well, wait, okay. Show me one job where 50,000 are physically assaulted. Mm-hmm. Show me that. It's nonsense.
And a crane operator doesn't spend 8, 10, 12 hours a day with the thing in the back of their head that someone could shoot at them at any moment and try to kill them. Like, that is a different scenario of living on the edge mentally while you're doing this job and trying to be a nice guy to everyone you come in contact at the same time. Like, that's not a crane operator, right?
You know, and I think this is a good time to segue into something that is rarely talked about in law enforcement, but should be, and that is that this year we've had 40 law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty. 40. We have had almost 80 kill themselves. Almost, and I think we're at 77 confirmed suicides of law enforcement officers this year. That's more than double, Ray. It's double.
It's directly connected to this job, period. 100%. You know, and that needs to be recognized more. And you know this. I'm speaking to the choir here.
Yeah, when you're speaking to me, of course, but for our for our listeners, you know, this is not an area that is often talked about. And I think by keeping it secret, law enforcement is not doing itself any favors. You know, law enforcement leadership really needs to take the helm here. And I got to tell you, there are some police leaders that are doing a great job when it comes down to supporting their cops. But I got to tell you this also, my friends, law enforcement leadership in so many places is the cause of post-traumatic stress injury. They're not the folks who are combating it. In many cases, you hear, I mean, this is something I've heard for years and years and years. And I've said it myself. I'm more scared of my bosses than I am of the people on the street. And this is
100%.
This is something that is never addressed, Ray.
No, I don't think people know because here's the big problem, Randy. It's who in law enforcement who's active can talk about this? They can't. They would be put on the desk and taken off the street in the instant if they start going public and social media against their departments. And that's the way it is. So I see it as our job to get the word out. These administrations, not all, obviously, there's some great ones. I've worked for some great ones. I've worked for some not great ones. They can make you feel as if you have two enemies, the bad guy in the street and the admin, to where you're in situations where you don't think you can win, you know, because, and it comes down to this, like, I've always kind of felt this way. Like, there's administrations that I think are weak and don't want work. And that's really what it comes down to. The ones that cause them to do more work are the very active officers and deputies. The ones who are proactive, the ones who are catching, you know, getting in foot pursuits and car pursuits and fights and shootings because they're proactive. They do anything they can to stop that. I think they Yes. want to curtail it because it's too much work. And it's the lazy factor that seeps in. And now you have these A-plus hero cops out there doing the great work. And they're the ones getting in trouble, not getting assignments, having IA investigations for doing a great job and being compared to guys who maybe aren't. These admins put so much pressure and second guessing on decision making that's done in quarter seconds. And half these admin guys probably skated through patrol in less than a year in their climb up the ladder. Right. And now they're the ones that are going to be holding judgment on these 5, 10, 15 year cops on the street. It's insane. And the pressure they put on absolutely makes it worse. Absolutely forces people, you know, for lack of a better word, to eat their gun.
Yeah.
You know, it's the pressure afterwards. It's the guys who get relieved of duty after a shooting before the investigations are done. And that happens on some departments. You know, how would that feel? You get in a shooting. It's justified in your mind because you did it. and you get your badge and gun taken away afterwards, pending investigation. Like, not for 3 days, but for 3 months, 6 months, a year. Some departments do that. How do those guys feel sitting at home? Well, unfortunately, some of them commit suicide over it. It happens, and it's wrong. So the more people know, the better.
You know, let's while we're talking about police leadership, you know, there was a you know, every now and then an article pops up that we see that makes you just shake your head and go, what? And this one that I read the other day on Blue Lives Matter website, Wake County Sheriff bans officers from wearing sunglasses in public. This guy just gets elected as the sheriff, and the first thing he does is he issues an order saying that you can't wear sunglasses. Have you ever heard of more absurd in your life?
I'm sure that must have been the most pressing matter when he took office in his new position, Randy. I don't know why you're giving the guy such a hard time. I mean, those evil cops with their sunglasses have been causing havoc for a very long time. And that's what these guys have to deal with. These guys on this department have to go out, strap on their gun, put on their vest, go out, deal with people in uncertain situations, risk their life, and have to be treated like a kindergartner and told what they can and can't wear as far as sunglasses. Like, I just don't understand admins like this.
Listen to this memo. Per Sheriff Baker's directive, effective immediately, while conducting official business on behalf of the Wake County Sheriff's Office, sunglasses are no longer allowed to be worn atop of the head, forehead area, or worn on the face while conducting official business when engaging the public or citizens of this county. Should you have any questions, please contact your direct supervisor. Oh boy, how many, can you imagine? I wish I was a fly on the wall when that was read to the street cops.
I would have loved to have been the sergeant in the briefing reading that to them. That would have been a good time, because I'm the guy who probably wouldn't have been admin's favorite sergeant most of the time when it comes to these kinds of issues. Just the fact that this came out, Randy, it's just incredible. I mean, if I'm those cops, number one, I might probably fight that one. I think that's more than just a stupid throwaway regulation. Number one, you're talking about eye damage, right? Like, there's plenty of science that says that eyes can burn the sun can burn your eyes and cause eye damage. So the other factor is, you know, why are we dealing with this? Why is a sheriff of a county in charge of courts and jails and cops in the streets? This is the concern. The completely out of alignment leader, which is just, he needs to go.
Exactly. And he just got elected. All I could say is it's going to be a rough 4 years for those poor working deputies in that police department.
Yeah, that union's going to be very busy with a lot of different things going on. I can promise you that.
Well, my guess is that there probably is not a union. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, guys, leaders, quote unquote, like this, can get away with the stuff that they do. But how do you have respect for a sheriff or a chief that comes out with some chicken shit order like that?
Well, you don't. And it shows that he's so ignorant to not even understand that if that's one of the things he puts out first or ever, that he's going to lose all of his credibility and respect from the street immediately. Even if that's like your pet peeve as the sheriff, Randy, and I mean, you hate sunglasses. You think everyone's mean and it's this horrible plague upon law enforcement. Even if that's your belief, you got to be smart enough to go, yeah, I'm just going to put that away. I'm going to lock that away deep somewhere inside and not piss off my entire department in the same day, right? Like, not the best first impression.
Yeah, I'm going with you. I mean, this is an ego issue as well. I mean, that, you know, I'm the boss. I could just see this guy, you know, pointing to it. Whenever he gives an order, he points to his collar and, you know, shows off that he's the, you know, he's the sheriff, that kind of stuff. We've all worked for somebody like that. But, you know, while we're talking about leadership, there was something that came up last week, and I had him on my show. Was the union president of the Minneapolis Police Officers Association, because he was on the program to talk about the mayor of Minneapolis and his boneheaded decision regarding survival training for law enforcement officers. He banned it. Now, he came out in the State of the City address banning training that helps officers prepare for armed encounters. And then he said, not only are they banning it, but the cops couldn't go on their off time either. So
it's absolutely crazy. And we're talking about Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, right? Like, I'm sitting here staring at my bookshelf, looking at two books, On Combat and On Killing, written by the man. I've attended his seminars before. They're not teaching you to go kill innocent people there. It's a mindset thing to survive not only during shootings, but after. It's a lot of mental after that help people with things like maybe PTSD. So for this guy to this mayor to go out and cancel the warrior training, it's just insane. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lost episode where we discuss this a little bit more. But the fact that this mayor is allowed to do it and direct a police department when it's a mayor and a police chief, the mayor has the right to put this on a PD. That's where I vote sheriff all day, where you don't have the influence of somebody like this, a so-called leader who has zero police experience, who has the ability to even have an impact like that, to take away training or anything from cops. I don't think politicians should be meddling with anything they don't understand.
Yeah, and clearly he does not understand. And yet, when Bob Kroll, the lieutenant who is in charge of the Police Officers Association, he told me that that his chief. Now remember, they used to have one of the worst chiefs in the world and mayors in Minneapolis. I mean, she was basically run out of town after years of incompetence. So they have a new chief there, and I asked him. I said, "Well, how's the chief dealing with this?" And he told me that he thought that the chief had dealt with it very well. That he actually went to the mayor and said, "Look, why don't you attend this training? In fact, I'm going to pay for it, and I'm going to have my command staff, and I invite the mayor and the city council to attend it, so you can see for yourselves that this is not some off the rails kind of training." And he said that the mayor wouldn't even think of it. So I laughed when the union president came out on television and said, "We're going to offer free training on officer survival to every police officer in the union. I'll be there, Mr. Mayor, and if you want to bring me up on charges for it, come and get me."
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. That is a beautiful thing, right? And that's the way it should be. It's completely just ridiculous that he's done this. And that honestly could affect someone's safety. That could make someone not survive something, because it could be one little thing that makes a difference. To take anything away from cops like that is just crazy.
You know, it seems that the politicians are playing with the lives of law enforcement officers and their lack of understanding or even caring to educate themselves on the issues is astounding. But I guess at this point, nothing that a politician does should surprise me. Like today I read New York lawmakers add having felons on juries to criminal bill of rights. So this is basically, if you're a convicted murderer, convicted rapist, they're now allowing you to be on a jury.
Well, Bernie's going to let him vote, so why don't we let him vote on the jury too? You know, like, let's just go all the way. Let's just restore all the rights. And, hey, you know what? While we're at it, why don't we just keep him out of prison too? That's mean. I mean, the whole prison thing's overrated. It's overcrowded. We just let them stay at home. It'll be fine. They can vote. They can do juries. You know, maybe they can be teachers in our schools. Like, that whole felony thing's not that big a deal. Where does it end? I don't know. Like, politicians now, they're as bad as entertainers. They're just clickbait. Like the Minneapolis mayor. Anything you go out and say police bad, I did this because police bad, you're going to get clicks, attention, traffic online, and now everyone's talking about the Minneapolis mayor. Like, same with the New York State. You know, now they're getting their clickbait out there. I think that they just take easy swipes at police because they know it's going to work.
Right. They know that. Exactly. It's low-hanging fruit.
Right? Yep. It's too easy because we can't come back. That's the big thing. The only people that can fight back are union reps and former officers, you know, administrations who aren't usually willing to go political and fight back.
And Ray and Randy.
Exactly. There's nobody else. These guys can't do it. So I'm more than happy to take up that fight.
Exactly. You know, and that's why this show is the voice of American law enforcement, because we have the ability to say what most police officers feel but cannot say.
That's it. And that's how it's always been. You know, they have to play politics. Unfortunately, that's where we're at today. They say the wrong thing to the wrong person, they're going to lose their job. And they can't risk that. So I guess the Randy and Ray show shall continue.
Absolutely. You know, while we're talking about basically decriminalizing everything, that seems to be the agenda on the progressive. I don't even like that word, progressive, because I always thought that.
That sounds good.
I know, being progressive is something that's good. You know, you're looking ahead and you want to make a difference and it's better. And so how do people like Bernie Sanders and that moron Ocasio-Cortez, how do they get assigned the label of progressive? And it's something, seems like something positive. How does that happen?
Well, it's because the media puts out whatever they want, Randy. So whatever they want to call themselves, everyone just jumps on board in the media, and it sounds great. You know, like, bleeding heart idiot probably wouldn't fly on CNN. Just saying.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. I would say you're probably right. Every single day now, when, you know, we look at the headlines, especially involving law enforcement, it almost seems like there is a race to be more and more, whoever says the most outrageous, ridiculous thing or says something negative about law enforcement, it seems that there is a race to be more and more vocal, if you will, about anti-law enforcement issues.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to our current culture of clickbait. Even the reporters, journalists, politicians, all of them, they care about how many followers are on Twitter, how many followers they have here and there, how many likes and comments they have. The most outrageous thing, the most anti-law enforcement thing, is going to get them more, and they know it. So I think they just double down on it. I think they just care about themselves, promoting their own agendas, and, you know, we get stuck having to deal with the nonsense that they cause.
You know, talk about, I'm glad you brought that up, because social media has so changed the environment towards law enforcement. It's absolutely astounding. And a story that came out, I think today or just yesterday, once again points points this out in very dramatic way. There's a little tiny video of about like 12 seconds of a police officer basically body slamming a female. It's a white police officer, black female, and somebody posted this on Facebook, and it's gone crazy. Of course, and the narrative is the racist police officer used excessive force against this poor woman, and all anybody is looking at is this little snippet of video. And it's just, I think it took place in Rio Vista, California. And now, of course, now there's a massive investigation. People are calling for the firing of the officer, and Now, you got a chance to see the entire video, right?
Yeah, right before this show, there is an actual 24-minute version of that same video, Randy. I know it's shocking that there's more to the story.
Oh.
But, right, the other 24 minutes and 38 seconds of it show a little bit different scene, where people are getting out of cars and trying to get back into cars that are being impounded and searched and refusing orders. And repeatedly, this officer's having to put people in this car and detain them and get them away because it's a chaotic scene and it keeps getting worse and keeps getting worse and people are showing up. There's lots of things to this story. The lady did not follow commands, period. Many, many, many opportunities to not have that not happen. He literally ordered her back to her car at least 5 times. She should have taken one of those 5 opportunities. And the whole video is out there, and it'll tell a story.
Yeah, but you know this as well as I do, that most people are not going to spend the time to look at the entire video because they want to see the 9 seconds of dramatic footage and then draw their own conclusions. But what I've seen as a result of this is that the media, of course, is taking up the side of the quote victims in this unquote, and then blowing it out of proportion instead of, as you say, the rest of the video is out there, but they're not showing it. What they're interested in.
They're showing the cell phone version of it from the suspect's family, not the body cam, right? We have the body cam now, which tells the entire story. Which is funny because you know that I used to be so anti-body cam. And they just are saving Nick every day. They're saving officers. It's great. It turned out to be awesome.
Now the reality is that there's a movement afoot by the same social justice, quote, groups that demanded that these body cameras be put on these cops. Now that they're showing the realities, they're singing a different tune. But what I saw from this video and the subsequent news coverage is the media loves to stoke up the narrative, the anti-law enforcement narrative, loves to gin up the nonsense about these, you know, the racist police are you know, using excessive force because, you know, they're big bullies and you know, it's so frustrating because we try to tell the full perspective on programs like this, and yet this is going to fall on deaf ears.
Yeah, and the news is happy with their 12-second clip that gets a lot of views, and they're super excited to say, hey, the department's looking at this, an internal investigation is open. They're not going to mention that, hey, we also reviewed the body cam and they were told 5 times to go to their car. It was a deteriorating scene over and over and over, more chaos, several people getting arrested prior to this, all the other things. No, Internal Affairs is investigating. News at 11. Watch this clip. And that's current social media and news. Something happened in the last 3 or 4 years where news stopped being news. I'm not even going out there and saying fake news, right? Like that's not even where I'm going with this. But news now is they're marketers. News is competing with everyone else to get your click because we consume our news online most of the time. So they've changed how they do everything and how they frame stories just to stay competitive because they're getting killed by independent people. But it's the unintended consequence, or maybe it was intended, I don't know, is that they've really laid out police in social over and over and over and over in very, very unfair ways. With a lot of these shootings, a lot of these incidents, all these cell phone shots, it's just like the story we're talking about. It happens all the time. And I really just think it's the shift in how news reports. They're not reporters anymore. They're just sensationalists trying to get clicks.
I don't see any changes coming. I mean, I would say that the pendulum is starting to swing the other way, but I'm not seeing it. It just seems to continue.
No, it's swinging against us, even with the giant social media pages. Like there's a massive anti-law enforcement sentiment on social. So, You know, I would love to see it change too. I don't know if it is. I think, unfortunately, this might be the new normal.
That's scary. You know, talk about videos. There's another video that surfaced that's also bringing out the trolls, if you will. That's another brutality video. This was St. Anne, Missouri, and I saw this and I laughed my butt off. There's a guy in a car and he refuses to open the window. He refuses to get out of the car and the police tell him to, and they're trying to get him to come out and he's in the passenger side and he's not coming out. And finally this detective comes over and he smashes out the window with his elbow and drags this guy out of the car. And it's a thing of beauty to watch.
Oh, his technique is wonderful. I was so happy with that elbow strike to the elbow. I was excited. And correct me if I'm wrong, I believe this was like a failure to yield situation that had stopped in traffic. And they're refusing orders to open the door or get out of the car. What else are the cops supposed to do? Are they supposed to, hey, you know what? I know you wouldn't stop our traffic stop, and now you won't get out of the car. You know what? I'm just going to take your picture and leave tactically retreat and make sure, you know, we don't want anything to happen. You know, sir, could you just put your license up in the window and I could take a picture of it, maybe mail you a ticket later? Like, what is that? Like, you run for the police, you don't stop for the police, you don't follow orders for the police, bad things happen. Nothing's changed.
I thought this was great. And yet, there's the outcry. They didn't hit the kid, they didn't nope. Beat him. And once the detective dragged him out, well, then suddenly his tune changed and he couldn't wait to put his hands behind his back.
It's weird how that happens when it gets real, right? Like, I think the suspects think that the officers these days aren't going to do what they say or follow through. I think that they think there's a softening.
Yeah.
And I think they get surprised when people do what they say they're going to do.
When a cop acts like a cop, oh my God, there's news. So we're kind of running out of time, Ray. So what I appreciate you taking the time to come on to the show again and do the Randy and Ray show. So we'll continue to do this. And for my listeners, this is Police Week. Honor those men and women who are serving and protecting. Understand that many have made the ultimate sacrifice, 40 this year alone. And if you would, go on to Facebook. You can find me under the Voice of American Law Enforcement. If you're a Twitterer, I'm at LT Randy Sutton. Love to hear your views and any stories that you want to talk about. Let me know. And please support the Wounded Blue. It's thewoundedblue.org. And go on to Amazon and watch our film, The Wounded Blue. Service, sacrifice, betrayed. See you again next week.